Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs we have very special guest Mr. Spencer Crittenden. And of course, you probably know Spencer was the game master on the Harmon Quest TV show with Dan Harmon, and now he's currently co-host of the That Happens podcast with Jeff Davis. Spencer, thank you so much for making time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What's up, you guys? I saw your intro. I saw a lot of much more famous and more in the kind of mainstream of D&D people than me. That's pretty cool. Thanks for thinking of me among those titans, you know, of the industry.
I'm not sure I totally agree with that. I think you're at the top of the list there, Spencer. Quick reminder to our viewers, if the live chat here today goes too fast and we miss a question, feel free to use the super chat on YouTube and we will be sure to get that question to Spencer. So looking forward to whatever our viewers might have questions today. So, yep. So just a recap, you know, you started becoming top tier, when you showed up on the Harmon Town, podcast that Dan Harmon would do live with Jeff Davis. And it's amazing to me that the moment that you actually met Dan and Jeff for the first time is caught on a recording. What I couldn't figure out what year was that when you showed up there?
Let me just say 2012 or something. That sounds right. I don't know. I know it's been in the neighborhood of a decade since then. Like, I don't know. I think we're under, but yeah, probably close to then. Yeah. A while ago, you know, it's weird. It's hard to imagine, you know, the trajectory of my life otherwise. You know, who knows what even would have happened. I'll probably work at an Apple store or a Best Buy.
It's one of the most amazing things to have on a recording. Like, Paul and I constantly like wish that some of the older school guys like had examples of their gaming on tape, and we can never find it, but we can find the initial moment when you started getting famous. Maybe just for viewers that don't know that particular moment, tell us how you got started working with Dan and Jeff.
Just a quick preface, you know, D&D is a social game and it's fraught with social perils. And I'd have a lot of social perils in my personal DM groups and D&D groups and stuff. And I had honestly sworn off D&D because I was like, D&D destroys friendships. Just makes me feel bad. It's just sanctioned bullying, man. I just like felt so like bad about how all the games went and stuff. You know, I don't know, nerds are, we could be very welcoming and we could be very prone to the same social dynamics of other humans. But anyway, so like that was kind of going into it. And then I started listening to podcasts because I was depressed, and I started listening to Harmontown, and he mentioned D&D like two or three times in the first like two or three episodes. And I was like, wait a second, I might be able to play D&D with these guys. And that was just a weird, insane thought I had in my head. And I acted on it. I went to the show because I had finally gotten more like time in my life where I could do, you know, things. I've never done anything like that. Never gone to a comedy show. And I was like, I got to branch out, you know, I got to start living life. And so, yeah, I went and on that fateful day, it was a fateful day of sorts. But yeah, so I show up and they started talking of, is there any DMs in the audience? Does anyone want to talk about Dungeons and Dragons? And again, because they had talked about it, you know, we know it's like this nerd kind of, the comedy show takes place in the back of a comic book store. So like, I was like, you know, this audience is kind of probably more prone to D&D than anyone else. And I looked around and no one was like raising their hands. Like, it was like, does anyone want to come up and talk about D&D? And like, no one's raising their hands. And I was like, oh shit. Like, my hand went up and they called me up, and I was basically talking them through just some very basic ideas. What D&D is, you have to pick an edition. What edition are you thinking of? Maybe you should do this, you know? And, oh my cat. And, then I, I guess I did so well or whatever. They were so tickled that they brought me back, and I made their characters, and they brought me back, and then I did the first session. And yeah, I don't, you know, they said that they were going to like try and do like a bit, like a game show out of it, where they like audition new DMs every week. And it's like the dating game, but with DMs. But I guess they just liked me. And so I stuck with them. Then the Harmontown went on a tour, and they were like, oh, well, you're coming on tour with us. And I was like, what? And, you know, from then on, I was a lot more in the circle. And yeah, you know, I was just part of Harmontown from then on. And yeah, I don't know. We went to make Harmon Quest, which is a TV show about D&D. Well, you know, internet TV show. What do you even call those these days? But that, yeah, so that's kind of what happened. And now I'm here in my apartment, and all of it's crumbled to dust.
out of curiosity, because we do discuss. Oh no, I think we've lost Dan. I've just noticed. I thought Dan was excitedly.
Oh yeah.
oh no!
I thought Dan, he was hanging on your every word.
Yeah. Well, all right, great. I get you all to myself for a few minutes while Dan tries to figure out what happened to his internet. I mean, because we do ultimately talk a lot about editions on this show, out of curiosity, what edition were you playing at that time?
So when I was playing, oh, we're back. Okay, great. we were just talking about D&D editions and stuff, right? When I started... Oh, we were stuck on Pathfinder, right? We bought some fourth edition books, but, and I you know, it was interesting, and we tried to play fourth edition, but my friends and I kind of switched back to Pathfinder and stuff. So that was where I was at. It was before fifth edition had hit, I think. So I was like, yeah, if you want to play, I think probably third edition or Pathfinder, they're relatively interchangeable. And certainly if you don't read the books, it doesn't matter to you, right? You know, so they were like, they were amenable, but that was the one I was most comfortable with. So that's kind of like how I pushed them. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of cool things about fourth edition, but my experience with it was really cursed. Like, I don't know. Like, I think a lot of other people's experience with it would be less cursed. But for instance, it was just weird. I also built like a dice tower with my dad, and we played fourth edition using that dice tower, and we rolled like literally like 10 ones in a row, and like probably 15 ones over the course of like 2 or 3 hours. And it's like, this is God telling us to stop. Like, we can't keep doing this. This is statistically impossible. Like, it's more likely that one of us developed some sort of terrible disease than what just happened now. We gotta burn this, like burn it all. And so, yeah, it was just like I said, I think there's a lot of cool stuff about fourth edition. But it, like our group's kind of acquaintance with it and experience with it was just really strange and off-putting for whatever reason.
So when you, go ahead. Oh, now we're both going to outplay each other. So when you went on to create Harmon Quest, then were you still, was that third? Cause I feel like, not sure. I don't feel like the edition or the specific rules of the game you're playing were really front and center on that show. Is that? Did you say that's apt?
Well, it's yeah. So we were playing Pathfinder. We kind of had the option of doing Pathfinder or doing fifth edition. Were kind of the main things we were choosing. But legally speaking, it seemed like it would be easier to deal with a smaller company like Pathfinder than deal with D&D and stuff. And we'd have very few encounters with D&D before. And they were like for Community, for instance, there was a D&D episode of Community. And my experience was that they wanted, you know, product placement, which is fine. It's a normal thing for an advertiser to ask. But like, I was like, I don't want to be thinking about producing the show in the context of appeasing someone who is only caring about the marketing potential of what we're doing, which is really negative and cynical. And I think now, looking back on it, I that was way overblown, and it would have been very easy to make them happy and probably would have been better for everyone if we, you know, no offense to Pathfinder. They were really generous. They've been great partners with us. But like I was personally really worried about like just dealing with a corporate behemoth. And so I was really scared, and we're like, yeah, let's just do Pathfinder. And I think fifth edition was like really just, I don't know if it was out yet, but it was really coming out and starting to come out. there's that point before the Monster Manual came out, like the Player's Handbook was published, but the Monster Manual is not published. And I'm like, I don't know what these guys are doing. Like, and so like that put me off. And so it just like, it seemed like too many unknowns to introduce to try and like switch like at that juncture. But yeah, so we did Pathfinder. Go ahead.
Oh, it's good to say, like, certainly what you were doing on that show, I feel like was fraught with challenges for a DM as far as I am concerned as an outside viewer. Yeah, I'd love to hear your opinion on it. But like, for example, we point to your show, we point to Harmon Quest a lot on this when we talk about, you know, using D&D as entertainment. Because my opinion has always been that like it really needs editing, right? That like that just turning on the cameras and filming a 4-hour session is slow. But my God, a half an hour. How on earth did you do it? That is
well, obviously tight. I had a great training practice, which was multiple years of 5-minute Dungeons and Dragons sessions, you know. So if you could do that, you could do anything, I think, you know, like it's time no longer exists. But I think, yeah, I think like I'm really lucky in the sense that I've had such a gentle growth curve and a lot of coincidences that lined up in my favor. You know, I was never a competent performer or anything, but I was a dungeon master, which is kind of a performance. You know, you read a script, you improvise and act. And so when I was coming on stage, you know, I got to just try and just, oh, I'm just going to DM. And that's, you know, performing. And so like I got more comfortable doing that on stage and that made me more comfortable as a stage presence. And, you know, similarly, like all the things we did, all the craziness of the Harmontown game was perfect practice for what would become the Harmon Quest game. It's like, what do we need? What's important? How do we keep people on engaged? How do we, you know, in Harmontown, I tried to be what was kind of normal for me DMing wise, which I just think of it as a world simulator. I don't necessarily have huge intentions. I just kind of want to have organic reactions. So if someone gets punched in the face, I want them to react like someone who got punched in the face, not someone who failed an intimidation check or something. You know, I just try and like process it as if this was a real world with coherent rules and stuff. And that was really bad on Harmontown. I think they like actively pushed against like railroading and direction, but at the same time, like when you said the world's yours, they would say like, I sit down and cry. And it's like, well, this isn't good either. You know, it's like, you can't not go anywhere and then, you know, like not, and then rage against having to go somewhere. And so Harmon Quest, it was really focused, you know, most of their movements were really tightly controlled. And I think, you know, obviously, I think they were on the same page as this is a television show. We're trying to make a narrative of some sort. We assume you know what we're doing. Let's just follow your cues, you know. And so I think because of that understanding, it helped both me design the adventure and, you know, the players kind of stick to the rails in a way that they probably wouldn't have if this were just Harmontown or, you know, for the podcast.
Super nice. Super nice. So how, like if you were DMing, you know, offline, what are the significant differences between you running like a normal D&D session at home versus what wound up happening on Harmon Quest?
So, yeah, I don't know. The thing about DMing is no one tells you how to do it. Like it's in the books and especially in other RPG books, they give you a lot more instruction on like really what you should do. But in D&D, I think fifth edition is probably the best, but the other books it's kind of like a grammar textbook where it's like, okay, you want to construct a sentence. Here's how you construct a sentence. Here's the grammar. But it's like, but what sentence? What sentence am I trying to do? What's a good sentence? You know, what will be someone read and what will make sense? It's like, no, here's how you grammar this. And it's like, that's so little of what I need to understand, you know? And so I think a lot of people just don't know what to do. I think like Shadowrun has better direction for storytellers and stuff. And reading other books can be really helpful for your DMing game. But yeah, I did approach that I call like a target approach, which I think I learned in a book called Extreme Dungeon Mastering, which I wouldn't recommend necessarily, but I think that's where I got the approach. And it's like it's like a target. So three circles. In the smallest circle, you plan the most. In the middle circle, you plan a lot less. And then the third circle, it's just like a couple bullet points. So you kind of focus where directly the players are. and don't plan too far outside of that, aside from some random bullet points, because, you know, the thing about DMing is you plan a lot of stuff that never gets used, and then if you're not a balanced person, you feel really bad about it afterwards. So that was my problem with normal DMing. But with Harmon Quest, okay, so have you ever wrote a DM or D&D campaign that you had to run past a network for, you know, I don't know, standards and practices purposes, and then explain to them? Yeah. And they're like, oh, where's the jokes? And it's like, well, this isn't a script. This is a dungeon master's outline for how he plans to run a game, you know? And the players, I don't know what they're going to do. And the guests, you know, the celebrity guests who have never played D&D before, I have even less idea of what they're going to do. So it was like, it's a crazy way to plan a D&D game is to, first of all, it has to be broken up into episodes that then we have to, at least on some level, promise we will accomplish in the record time, you know, because in normal D&D, it's like, no, we just went to the store. You know, you listen to Critical Role. They'll spend a whole 3 or 4 hour session going to the store, which is great. But, you know, I can't sell that to the network. They're not going to like stand for that the same way. And so it was really weird getting notes that were studio script television notes, you know, on, again, a DM's outline. And I think there's a lot of good in that, and thinking about it in terms of television gave me a lot of insight into how to plan it. It was like, because it's more television-y. It's like, okay, we need this character to say this at some point in the episode. We want to foreshadow this. We'd like this to happen and this climax to happen. And that, like, it kind of brings into focus the kind of cool story elements that you want to bring to the game, and then you have to sell it to the network executives. And they have good storytelling ideas, but, you know, storytelling in a tight story isn't normally how you necessarily approach DMing, especially a tight story that will exist in 5 hours, you know, 10 half hour episodes. So it's completely different. It was a challenge, but at the same time, again, I think like the Harmontown stuff got me used to thinking really small and just trying to punch up this in that moment and kind of hanging on those for the whole episode. And also my DM style is more, I start with a concept and then like build it out. So it's like a floating crystal cave or like a dragon with a freaking hand missing. I don't know, you know? And then, so like just evocative concepts are where I start. So for the episodes, I was like, just brainstorm evocative concepts and then brainstorm like mission types, like, oh, escort mission, find the thing mission, etc. And then let's start connecting them and building off of them. And then, so you get 10 pretty different locations, 10 relatively different kind of ideas, while still kind of in this formulaic, you know, we go somewhere, we're probably going to get in a fight. Maybe we find a treasure or yell at someone, you know, and then at the end, something else happens. And then the other thing is, since it's a TV show, you can kind of insert some scenes that like don't include the players, which you can do in regular D&D, but I don't think it makes as much sense to be a, like, cut to a shadowy tavern where the villain is like, yes, yes, follow the party. You know, it's like that would never happen in a D&D game, but that in a DM's mind, that stuff is happening behind the scenes. It just doesn't come out. So it becomes this cool thing that you can play with, because it's like, well, the players don't know, but the audience can know this. This could be really helpful for the audience. And so, yeah, I think it was a really interesting way to do it.
That's fascinating. I wonder, are there elements like that that you have pulled from your experience in Harmontown and Harmon Quest back into like your normal D&D play?
Huh.
Good question.
I don't think so, just because it was like, it was such, I don't know. I don't even know if I could do it the same way this time around if we did another season, just because it was like such this tight, like package of a lot of stress in times of my life and the kind of games we were playing and stuff. And it's like, I think it would be really hard to even get myself into that headspace. It just felt like, making a TV show. And then instead of learning to write, I just got to leverage my DM experience, you know, but it's like all of it was in focus, especially just the editing and stuff. You know, it's like, what can we do that has built in edit time? Because we have an hour long records that cut down to a half hour. That's a 50% edit, you know? So it's like, we have to have, I called it built in crumple room, where it's like, we'll do this stupid shit and it'll get cut out, but it's like funny. And if there's jokes, then you put in, you know, a minute of that to kind of sell the jokes. But it's like, yeah, this is just here to kind of edit out, really. And that was an interesting approach. Yeah, because otherwise you're going to be losing important plot moments or, you know, interesting combat details and stuff. So that was another, you know, and I think people do that too with DMing planning, where it's like, oh, let's do some side downtime activities or like some curiosities. Maybe a fight breaks out in the tavern. Maybe they meet a drug salesman or something, you know, and then here's the quest, you know. So I think it was kind of a similar way of planning that, just a more extreme version.
I mean, Paul and I have confronted this same editing issue with our tournament D&D The Big Bad Show 2 years back. And what we were doing there was it was much more detail oriented. The game was actually on a battle map, and we were, you know, Paul was taking commands from players, moving miniatures around on an actual grid. But we had like a 4 hour shoot time that got edited down to 2 hours, so the same 50% type time. In a very different kind of context. One thing that one of our viewers actually asked last week was, like, what about, maybe this wasn't a big issue for you, like, what about, like, some ongoing spell effect? Like, what if someone cast a strength spell or something like that? And does it become incoherent? Like, did you have trouble editing around that? Like, here's the start, here's the middle, here's the end. And our viewer was asking, like, was there ever a problem of, like, the end got cut and the viewers don't know that it stopped or something like that? Was that an issue with like ongoing D&D effects at any point?
Not really. I think on one hand, Harmontown just kind of taught me to be all like, well, think of every episode as a full day's rest, just because they're not going to be able to track any of this. And I am certainly not going to track it for them because it won't matter. Because I'll write it down and then they'll just blow past that anyway. You know, so... So for Harmon Quest, it was very intentionally. It doesn't matter how an episode ends or starts. Every episode is a new day, new spells and everything, of full HP. So episode to episode, that wasn't an issue. But also, you know, you have to... the thing about editing is, like, if you're clever with it, and I'm not very clever with this stuff, but, you know, you can underlap audio over video and create transitions that don't exist that kind of make moments that are fake. And we leveraged a lot of that with Harmon Quest, especially because there's animation. So you can completely change the meaning of all sorts of stuff as long as you had a coherent audio track that didn't sound chopped to hell, you know. So, you know, for instance, if there was an instance where we cast an enlarged person on someone and then they were enlarged for the whole episode, and then we had this funny moment where they stopped being enlarged. And then, you know, later we were like arguing over whether or not they were enlarged because we forgot, you know. Instead, you could cut out a lot of that, rearrange some of that, and go, okay, you're enlarged. Okay, are you enlarged or are you not? Let's have a quick version of the argument about it. And then after that, let's just put the joke about it. And then it's like, you know, you lose most of the awkwardness. You leave the comedy and the joy. You completely make a fake moment out of a real moment, but it feels true. Because that's another thing about audio editing is it's like you can be as fake as you want because you have to make it feel true. And sometimes it can only feel true if it's really fake and constructed. Like we would kill a lot of laughs that would happen because the laughs were too loud for the energy flow of the show. Because, you know, we cut out a bunch of bits where there was escalating laughter and the audience is getting in a better mood. So then we say a joke that's not very good, but everyone's in such a good mood that it's a raucous laughter and applause. And it's like, but that doesn't make sense. The audience isn't going to see that and go like, oh, yes, this was exactly that funny. They'll be like, what the fuck are they laughing at? You know? Oh, sorry.
Our quota is 4 per hour, so you have 3 more to go, Spencer.
Okay, good. I think I can manage that. But so, like, in terms of, like, kayfabe and, like, preserving the integrity of the game and stuff, you know, we took a lot of liberties because it's like, yeah, this is a show. I think it preserves the truth of the game, but, you know, it was just about trying to make it all fit. And again, when you have to cut so much out of it and try and preserve moments and stuff, like, I think it worked really well. Like, we did an episode where there was a mystery, and we basically rearranged all the clues in the mystery to make it feel like more of a solid escalation. And we also, like, they interviewed, like, 2 or 3 people, and then we cut it so, because I... I never voice my characters very well. You know, I'm not a good voice actor. And so all the characters would just be like, yeah, I don't know. And so they talked to like three different people, and we just made that all one person by removing all the interstitial kind of dialogue. It's just question one, question two, question three to the same person, you know, and stuff like that, where it's like the audience doesn't need to know that it was three different people. Like, is that what the story's about? No, you know, so I think that it was honestly very freeing and gave us a lot of leeway to be able to like edit and stuff, especially since it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just stenography. It was like we're trying to make a cool cartoon that has cool cartoony moments.
Was it apart from like just the joy of creating something like that? I'm curious, like, was it in the moment, were you having like a lot of fun running the games, or you were like, you're bastardizing my game, you Hollywood people are destroying D&D, or was it just,
or maybe it was just stressful? I don't know.
Especially after the first season, I started thinking like, okay, I know we're editing. And so I'm thinking like an editor. So there would be things where people would be like, ah, this is great. And I'm like, I'm editing this out. This is gone. Like, and sometimes like how I would respond was like, I'm making an edit point, you know? So it's like, they'll do something and then the next thing I'll say, or I'll say something and then try and have a good clean pause. So like, I would try and create edit points to like solve that stuff. I think they were really good, generally speaking. And almost every time, there was one episode, it was like the third episode of the third season. There's one episode where it really felt bad, but aside from that, almost everyone was like better than we could have imagined every single time. And I was just so excited and also just worried, because it's like, this has to stop at some point. Like, my luck's going to run out. We can't just have these perfect records that have no big problems, you know? And then the third episode of the third season had a lot of like really important kind of narrative weight and pipe. And then it just didn't get like, what I do is I kind of have bullet points for the NPCs to kind of say like, oh, once you get to the port, say like, we got to go to the station or something. You know, it's not like, here's what you're doing and here's why you're doing it. It's just these little bullet points that then I can massage. And as a DM, add context that kind of fills out what they're saying. And it was just so much. And then we just weren't doing any of the things. And they were supposed to go through this magical wasteland. And then the whole party was like, well, let's not go through the magical wasteland. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, what do you do? And again, it's just like, we sit. And so it's like, but we have to do something. Like, we can't just be. And then, you know, the guest was sensing that energy. And so she was like doing improv and trying to like do musical bits and stuff and singing. And it's like, but this isn't. Like, this isn't, we can't just fill the episode with sitting and singing. Like, we need, this is, again, probably the most impactful story dump of the whole season. We need to get this out. Wow. And so, yeah, in that version, again, sensing that something could go wrong, I was like, you're going to have a fox. He's your familiar. And the fox can, you know, take care of anything you can't. And so basically the fox is like, here's the deal, you guys. And then like, and he piped everything. And then after everything was piped, they again just kind of sat around. And so, yeah, we had to cut basically everything out. I made a combat. And so then we rearranged everything. So the combat came first. Then they had some fun. And then the fox was like, here's what you got to do. And then they go to location B. And then the episode ends. And so, like, that was so bad. And, like, it's not like anyone's fault. It's just, it's the exact flaw of doing it this way, right? It's not always going to work like you want it to. And after the episode, the execs who watched tapings and stuff, like, looks on their faces and they're like, is this gonna be okay? And I was like, yeah, no, this is gonna cut together okay. It might not be as funny as the episodes, because the other episodes, because we're probably gonna have to cut a lot of what were jokes that just kind of took time, but you know, this isn't gonna be the strongest episode, but we have what we need narratively, and this was the worst one, so it's only gonna come up from here. And then it was fine all the rest of the time. It was great. And so, you know, if I did another season, I'd probably, you know, apply that lesson, but that was the last season. So, you know, nothing there.
We were talking earlier, you kind of hitting on this a little bit again. I think you mentioned earlier that it was about the sort of difficulty of showing GM notes to, TV execs and explains them. This is not a script.
What a fascinating problem. Okay. That is a problem I never would have imagined. It's just such a fascinating problem. I'm glad you're bringing this back, Paul.
Yeah. So William mentioned in the chat, he said it's almost like an episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway, which of course is hilarious because you had Jeff Davis on the show, who's of course was on Whose Line Is It Anyway. Did you use improv comedy at all as a bridge? Like, did that help with the TV execs to be like, no, this is like improv? Or did you have to, you know, I guess how much did you leverage improv comedy?
Let me add to Paul's question here, because we talk about improv a lot on this show. Like the second episode we ever did of this show was about improv. Two weeks back, we had Karen Twelves, who's author of Improv for Gamers. And coincidentally, I just happen to be in New York here. I'm personally taking an improv class at the moment. And the first thing the instructor said was, if you know Whose Line Is It Anyway, this class is going to be like this. So us and our viewers kind of debate sometimes about how much gaming is like improv. How much of that was used in Harmon Quest for your purposes?
Well, I think that Harmontown kind of taught me those ropes. I don't think it was super clear necessarily. I don't have an improv background or anything. But, you know, like, again, I think this is like in fourth edition. They talk about how, like, you can use your players' ideas. And then their suggestion was, like, they had, like, an example of play. And it was, you see this dark, foreboding tower as crows and ravens fly around, and then the player offers up, and then a tendril shoots out of the tower and snaps up one of the birds and draws it back in quickly, and so that implies this tower has magical tendrils, and then the DM is like, yes it does, and is like, so that was kind of the gist of that kind of passage, which always really stuck with me, because it's like your players have so many ideas that you're never going to be able to second guess. A lot of times that can be a problem, but if you reframe it as something on offer, then it becomes just a way of making everyone feel a lot smarter. You know, when a player thinks that a clue is one way and then it turns out to be that way, they feel so smart and good at the game. And if you think about ways to like maximize those moments, you can, you know, if you let go of your ego a little bit, you know, and let go of control and just be like, yeah, let's see what ideas are being brought to the table. I think it's a lot better. You know, it is a collaborative storytelling. You know, at the end of the day, your players are trying to be awesome, and you want to highlight that to the extent you can. So I think that Harmontown kind of taught me a lot about the value of improv in the gaming. And I think that, you know, when I think about DMing, I think a lot about like the rules of improv and comedy teachings and stuff, and almost all of those have pretty strong mappable correlations to being a DM and stuff. But you know, I don't know that we leveraged it too much on Harmon Quest. I think, you know, when there were silly moments, I would let them go and try and make them bigger, and I would try and make comedic premises built into like the episodes just because we wanted it to be funny, you know. So I tried to like kind of set them up to like knock down hits and stuff, you know. But, you know, it was probably a lot tighter. You know, it's definitely the most railroaded campaign I've ever done. And it's like, it's the most on because you have to just the time wise, you know. So like on some level, yeah, we leverage it a lot. But on another level, it was very, very tightened down compared to, you know, what I'd normally do, which is bounce off of people a lot more and go where the energy is, you know, which still happened. But I would have to contain it and dial it back because it's like we gotta. You know, a lot of times it would be like, we have 20 minutes left and we have to get through like this and that plot point real quick. And sometimes we could go later, but you know, that was kind of a concern for me. It was mostly trying to like get everything done in time.
Interesting. Our Karen, our guest from 2 weeks ago, when we had a moment where her thesis was that it's easier to get gamers into improv or acting than it is the reverse. It's relatively hard to get improvisers or actors into gaming because they're not used to that structure. Did you find that? Or it sounds like maybe you were just like in love with all your guests all the time.
I was. Yeah. I think we got really lucky on our guests. I tried to get guests that I thought would play really well, and I think they all overperformed. But I also think that people understand that improv can have rules, you know, like short form, long form, you know, there's different kinds of games and stuff that have their own kind of rules. So I would kind of, when I would talk to anybody, we had multiple ways to kind of indoctrinate new players and stuff into what it's going to be. But also, I don't know, I think a lot of people, no offense to anybody, teaching is really hard. I think a lot of people are really bad at teaching new players D&D. I think a lot of people are really bad at teaching new players Magic the Gathering, and it's a true tragedy to me. I I really want to fix it, because a lot of times you can unintentionally inspire gatekeeping that makes people feel unwelcome and don't want to play. And that's never what I want to do, because it's like, everyone can do this in their own way. There's not a right way, and you can have so much fun. And that's what matters, is having fun. You could be having fun in a new way. And it's like, why would you ever want to shut the door on anyone to that? But back to the point. So like before the show, I would brief the people, and I could have done a lot more prep. I could have called them into my office, on an earlier date. I could have had a long talk where we talked about what we did, but I did not think of that. On the day when they got into the green room and were settled, I would wander in with my with their character sheet, pointed out to them. I had a separate page that's like a cheat sheet saying, like, your character is a knight that uses holy magics, and they're from this, and they like that, and they're a goblin or whatever. And then, you know, you have these magical powers. You can do this. You can do that. You have sneak attack or whatever, you know. And so it would just really break down very basic what it would be. And then the character sheet itself was also put in a really strong shorthand that I've developed from doing Harmontown, which is just the gist of it, because I know what the rules are. So they just have to understand what they think they're doing. And then I can figure out rules wise what that means. And so that was part of it. I would say, oh, so D&D is a lot like improv, but with a bit more rules. In improv, you can say, I have the gun. I'm a queen of England. You better all get down on the floor, or I'm going to shoot you. But in D&D, you only have the stuff that's on your character sheet. If it doesn't say you have a gun, then you don't have a gun. You could say all those things, but they wouldn't be true. People would look at you like a person who said those things. And then I am the DM. I have God powers, so I can adjudicate this and that, and I have more power than everyone else. But you kind of have to play your character and do, you know, you can't ascend to godhood. You can't just shoot a fireball because you want to shoot a fireball. And they seem to grasp that pretty well. And then before the show, we would have a quick breakdown where it was like a crash course in D&D. I would make up usually a real premise, not a fantasy premise. I would say, you know, Gillian Jacobs, you're at the car wash and a man comes up to you with a big bag of gold, you know, and he says, I'm going to give this to anyone who can make me laugh. And so it's just role playing in the kind of therapy sense of role playing. Right. And just to kind of give them the idea of, I describe something to you. You tell me what your character does. I tell you what happens, you know, just to kind of indoctrinate them into the flow of the game. We would do that in a comedic kind of way so that the audience would think it was funny. You know, and then everyone would applaud, and then I would be like, you did it, you're playing D&D, you know. And I think that kind of confidence and applause that inspired would really keep them going for the whole hour, you know. And that was the other thing, is I tried to make the guests look as good as possible. Editing wise, we tried to cut out anything where they felt silly or kind of behind the rules, because a big part of what we wanted to do was make D&D feel approachable and interesting, and not like, you know, all these common depictions with LARPing and the people being really exacting about the rules and stacks of books on every table. You know, it's like, it's kind of more like poker night, you know. It's just, you're hanging out with your friends, you're making jokes, casual jokes, and you're doing something, you know. But it's like, it's not just this enshrined church of gaming. It's a social hour, you know. And so the celebrity guests were the audience, surrogates. And so if you're a new watcher, you think, oh, this guy's never played before. Let's see what he does. And oh man, he's having a great time. He's laughing. He's making good jokes. He's killing monsters and being cool. He's using magic items. This is way different than everything I heard about. You know, that was kind of what we wanted to do. So I really tried to kind of make the guests look as cool as possible and have a lot of cool things they could be doing. So, you know, if they were ever at a loss, they could just look down at their character sheet and go like, I use Megaton Punch. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. That sounds cool. That sounds like D&D. That was another thing, is I would retheme everything to just kind of make it more interesting. So like, for instance, I don't know, there's that cleric spell that's called like Divine Holy Smite or something. It like brings down a column of like holy fire. And so I was like, well, this guy, he's more of a rock guy. So it's Megaton Punch, and he does like this big rock, like he gets this big rock glove and he punches and it creates this big shockwave. It's the same thing. It just does, you know, bludgeoning and earth damage or whatever, you know. And so I would do that for all the characters. So it just felt a bit not as, you know, regimented in the rules, and felt more just like doing cool things. And I think that also made it more improv-y. you know, like Fate and Dungeon World, I think they're a bit more phrased like that, where it's just kind of, I describe it as like, oh, an adult board game, or like apples to apples with a rules insert. And it's like this simple breakdown and here's what you can do. And I think that that kind of approach is a lot more grokkable, for lack of a better term, you know, for players.
That's nice. That's nice. I mean, you were talking about, you know, the for people of our age and older, that there wasn't any training or proper teaching in how to be a DM. But sometimes, like, we talk about now, maybe that's shifted because of the accessibility of D&D TV shows or online shows. And I mean, the two examples we always come up with are you and Matt Mercer with Critical Role. So do you ever feel the crushing responsibility of like being the main sommelier bringing people into this hobby? Because well, I feel like you're in that territory.
I think there's a huge gulf between people who know who I am and people who don't know who I am, where like for people like you guys are like, oh, I'm a titan in the industry. And for people, it's like, who is that? You know, maybe they heard of Harmony Quest a little bit in passing or whatever, but it's like, it's not on people's radar. It's like, I don't know, you know, I don't know anything about basketball. So I'm sure these, comparisons are insane, but you know, it's kind of like if it's like, oh man, players like you and LeBron James, you know, Marcus Smart and LeBron James, it's like, but they don't even belong. That's LeBron James. Like, you can't put me in a duo with LeBron James. You know, it's just kind of an absurd, in my mind, it's an absurd comparison, because it's like, yeah, it's, you got a basketball player and you got LeBron James, you know, and that's how I feel about Matt Mercer. But I it's not like I disagree. Like, I do think we're twin. I think Brandon Lee Mulligan is probably kind of, especially nowadays, is probably more in that second spot than me. But, you know, it's always a bit silly, just because I feel like it's such an insider thing to know like this much about Harmon Quest and stuff. And I think that kind of distorts what other people kind of think of my, which is not to say I'm not famous or whatever, but that's just always how I think about it, is it's just like, I'll take it. I get what people are saying, you know, especially because we are these very different approaches, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, but you're a multi-million dollar multinational organization, you know, with a charity attached to it. Like,
right.
I was on a podcast and did a web series. Yeah, it's I'm great. I'm very grateful to be included in their company, but it's to me, it's so strange. I don't think I feel a lot of pressure from it. I mean, you guys, whatever you guys want.
I don't think we've interviewed anyone on this show yet who didn't have at least a little imposter syndrome. And, you know, the anecdote I like to tell is being at D&D Live, the big, Wizards of the Coast production about, with hosting all these streamers and D&D celebrities, and having Matt Mercer come up on stage and say, "Welcome to the biggest collection of people suffering from imposter syndrome ever assembled." So it's
I'd say. I was really afraid of Matt Mercer and Critical Role and stuff, just because, you know, we would be brought up in the same thing, and it's like, yeah, but again, it's so shameful. It's like, yeah, it's not. I know I'm the worst one, you know, and I was really jealous and stuff, and of their success and everything, but. The show came out, the Vox Machina show, and, you know, since then I've been listening to Critical Role. I'm well into their second season now, and it's really good, and, like, all of my doubts and stuff just melted away, because it's like, yeah, no, I thought of these guys as the man, but they're just different me, you know, they're just a different alternate reality version of people like me that just exploded. And that's kind of what I went through. And so they probably feel very much like me. And it just completely changed my thinking. It was like, it went from like jealousy and like institutionalized versus garage band culture or something, you know, towards just, yeah, no, we're just hobbyists. Like, we're just doing a game, you know, which is very healthy for me to have come to terms with it.
Yeah. Excellent.
I like that.
Is that an answer? Yeah, I don't even know.
That's a great answer. I mean, what I was trying to get at is, like, both of you, I feel, do a great job of being very welcoming and making it seem like a hobby that people should be interested in, anyone can get involved with, which I agree is really the point of what we want to do. Yeah, I think that's well put.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I get a lot of notes from fans and stuff, and My favorite is them saying, you know, oh, I started playing D&D because of you, and I've heard it thousands of times at this point, and it's easily the best part of being a public figure is I introduced new ways for people to have fun, and they are having fun. You know, I'm value adding to people's lives. Like, what more can you ask?
That's great. That is a fantastic way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so here's the question I got to ask. I mean, you kind of touched on this before. I hate it when other interviewers ask this question because it just seems like a painful question, but I feel like I got to ask. What is the outlook for a possible fourth season of Harmon Quest? Zero? Gauge it in one to six. Out of six picks on a die. Is it one in six? Three in six?
One in six is too high. It's rolled off the table, I think, you know.
Okay.
But the situation is, you know, we got commissioned to make the show by, what was it, CISO, which died. We got commissioned for a second season by CISO, and then they died, and we didn't have anywhere to exist. VRV was looking to kind of attract celebrity talent that they could leverage in their marketing. So they were like, oh, we're going to buy this. We're also going to try and get other Harmontown related stuff to put up on VRV. And it's called Verve. Everyone calls it VRV, and it is VRV, but they call it Verve because they don't understand human behavior, I guess. I don't know. How can you make your thing a three-letter acronym and then demand people call it a fucking like word, you know? There's two of my four. But they were never in the business.
Burn that bridge a little bit right here on air.
It's fine. It's just they were never in the business of creating new content. It's like really expensive. Okay. So I think we were lucky to get, you know, a third season out of them. And then they made it pretty clear that they're moving away from producing new content. Like their whole, from the beginning, their whole business model was licensing. You know, they're a subsidiary of Crunchyroll, and Crunchyroll just licensed anime from Japan. You know, it's a lot more profitable to buy the rights to something than it is to commission the creation of it. And I think they got a lot more traction on their anime side. So that's kind of where they were moving. So, but they still have the rights for it because I think they still think that the Dan Harmon, the Harmon Quest is still a good draw into the service. So they're holding it. You know, potentially we could make what is effectively the same show. Potentially we could get those rights back or secure rights to make another show on another network without endangering the rights of VRVs to streaming that. But that's effectively impossible. You know, it's like once a show gets canceled, sometimes Twitter will save Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something. But, you know, that's a 0% chance. It's it can happen, sure. But, you know, it depends on reading the bones, you know, especially at this point, I think it's too far gone. You know, we could do another thing potentially, but it would be like pitching a new show from the beginning. You know, it's just starting back at square one, which, again, not impossible, but not likely.
That makes sense. I will say that as a fan, I do wish that Harmon Quest had been on a more easily accessible service. You know, if it had been on Hulu, I would have loved that. Just so it would be a little bit more obvious to get my, you know, friends or acquaintances into it, frankly. But it's hard. We know enough. We know enough about that it's hard.
Yeah, it's like we wanted that too. Obviously, you pitch and then only certain people buy the pitch. But there was a point at which Mike Lazo of Adult Swim seemed interested. And I think like Dan forgot to email him back at some point and then felt guilty about that and thought he would look stupid to try and circle back about it much later. And I definitely have resentment over that decision because I think we would have done amazing on Adult Swim. I think our only problem, not our only problem, but I think our biggest problem was it not having the reach by living where it were. Like, you know, I gotta imagine if it were on Netflix, it would get a lot more views. You know, Harmontown is on Netflix, or it was for a time. I don't know if it still is. And it got, you know, there's people that are like, wait, I saw you in a movie on Netflix without any understanding, not even understanding there's like a Harmontown podcast necessarily, just because they half remember a movie they saw on Netflix. And, you know, that's the kind of like reach we could have had for Harmon Quest potentially if we got bought by like a bigger company. I think it would have been an amazing fit for Adult Swim. And in my mind, there's no reason not to. Like, he wanted the show to be on Adult Swim, and we just did not go for that. It was lame. But
you know, I hear that. Milk. You know, I'm you know, I frankly sympathize a little bit because I have really stupidly dropped some emails in the past that would have been good opportunities, and I kicked myself forever from it. Some of our viewers may know that I owe some of our viewers emails back right now. But that's a little too bad. That makes me feel sad.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Before we run out of time, though, tell us about the stuff you are working on right now. Specifically, I'm looking at the That Happens podcast, which I'm seeing on the website. The tagline is, "We play Dungeons & Dragons sometimes." So
sometimes.
How often do you play Dungeons & Dragons on that show?
And that's what Jeff Not Davis very often.
Yeah, Jeff Davis of Who's Line, who is touring actively. If you want to see him, you can buy a Who's Line ticket show. But we used to play more. I don't know. The thing is, I didn't want to do a show much longer than an hour. And like once you're at like 40 minutes, it's like, I think I can talk us through to the end of the hour. And so at that point, it's like I could switch gears and start up the D&D and then, you know, who knows what happens. Or, you know, I can keep ranting about my butt or something, you know, and it'll fulfill the same time, which, you know, on the other end of that, on Harmontown, when we would be like a half hour from the show ending, I would be so mad when they wouldn't play D&D, but now I'm essentially doing that to myself. So I have like newfound understanding of why that happens. We don't play too much D&D, but we have kind of two campaigns going on the show. There is the main campaign where Jeff plays a cat tabaxi pirate called Fuzzy Knuckles, and we're kind of just mostly running around doing where we started with like Ghost of Saltmarsh stuff, and now we're kind of branching out a little bit. But Jeff had to go on tour, and so our producer Kevin, who plays Johnny DeFever, he kind of started flashing back to his older days of adventure, and that is like a really blatant that campaign is like a really blatant ripoff of Final Fantasy Tactics. I've just always wanted to see if you can map Final Fantasy Tactics story onto Dungeons and Dragons, and so this is just a really transparent attempt at that. It's going okay. It's not, you know, it needs more. You can't just do that. You need to like make it more Dungeons and Dragons as opposed to single player video gamey, you know, but it's pretty interesting. But yeah, we haven't played very much. We might play today, 5:30 Pacific time, you know, is when we do That Happens, drophomevideo.com. And we might play today because Jeff is back in town and maybe he'll want to play, but maybe not. I don't know. I also do, I have a friend who streams on Twitch, twitch.tv/Frank Howley. And on Tuesday nights at 6:30 PM PST, we play Dungeons and Dragons. It's, we call it Big Dogs D&D, and it's by far, and if you know me, you know I do comedic DMing. I think in Harmontown, there was a time where they had to bypass a giant Dr. Pepper machine that was like just filling the entire tower with Dr. Pepper. So, you know, I get a little crazy. And this is by far the craziest campaign I've ever done. The main character, Wario Spawn. That's right, Wario, who is Spawn from Spawn. And yeah, Wario, he died in the Mushroom Wars, and he was resurrected by the archdemon of hell, the Taco Bell Chihuahua, who wants Wario Spawn to pursue his Taco Bell goals and further the influence of Taco Bell, because the Taco Bell dog got kicked out of management, and he's hoping Wario Spawn can kind of spread his influence enough to get him back into the halls of power. So you got weird Mario stuff. You've got this weird Taco Bell side plot. Their home base is a Taco Bell. They got their Taco Bell stolen. The Taco Bell, if you ring it, it makes tacos come out. It was stolen by the Doritos Locos Kobolds. It's honestly, there are a lot more rules than it sounds like, but the actual content is insane. We killed Jigsaw from the Saw series. We went underwater and fought a wizard named Shen Yun, who was a Murloc from World of Warcraft, and we learned, you know, 5,000 years of tradition. So it's insane. It's really funny. I'm really proud of it, even though it's kind of like a shoestring operation. I think it's just really fun, silly D&D.
I think you got over your product placement issue, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Like, I thought it was going to be a normal campaign. And then I started talking to one of the guys, and he's like, yeah, it's going to be great. He'd be Taco Bell, and my friend's going to be a Cheeto. And I was like, I do not know what this is, but I know I need to move in this direction. Like, I'm not going to shy away. And it's just been a lot of fun. Yeah. But I also, I have a Patreon, and I just release D&D content, you know, I try to format it really closely to the stuff you see in terms of style guide and formatting to what you see in like actual official D&D releases. And I have art that's like from wombo.art, which is like this algorithmic art thing. So it's not, you know, an amazing high rendering detailed art of stuff, but it's pretty cool looking art. And yeah, I got different stuff. Like, I did a subclass for a warlock. I did like a cult called the Cult of the Big Cool Eye with monster stat blocks, and a cult called the Machine Tide, which is like these machine worshippers that want to replace all flesh with machines and kind of further the evolution of machine and artificial life forms. And what else did I do? I did one that's called Commerce and Casinos, which is it invents a Bitcoin like god named Brock, who is who's the god of commerce, and he has a special coin called Brock coin that's validated on the Brock chain, which is like this magical device that he made. And so like worshipers of Brock can do crazy things like mint NFTs, and they can investigate the Brock chain for like insight into investment opportunities and stuff. And they have a lot of spells that are kind of like video game stores where you can just sell something for half price, or you can buy an item from Brock himself by like laying down the money and like praying. And so there's a lot of commerce-based spells. There's two subclasses in that one. One is the Cleric of Brock subclass, and one is a warlock patron, a deity of Lady Luck. So it's more of kind of like a gambler casino type archetype of warlock that kind of plays with luck a little bit. And it has some stuff for, what do you call it? Gambling, like ways to gamble. Like if you want to do a slot machine, if you want to do, I made a modified version of Texas Hold'em using dice, where you roll d10s instead of drawing a hand. But I think it's really fun. There's even a Flump Splat Bingo, which is kind of chicken crap bingo, but with flumps. That one's really cool. There's some road encounters that I just put out, and I just put out my dragoon subclass from Final Fantasy Tactics, or just Final Fantasy. You know, dragoons, they jump way up into the sky, and then they do these spear attacks, and so it lets you jump around like a crazy madman. So I do a lot of stuff. I think it's really good. Eventually, at some point, I'm going to make a portfolio and like send it to Wizards and be like, come on, this is good, right? You want this, right? Come on, you want to hire me, right? But so I'm kind of like building a portfolio. I'm really proud of it. I also do two modules, the Sixler.itch.io. I sell two modules. Those are also really good. I've gotten tons of reviews. I think, and those are also in the same kind of style guide. They got nice maps, stat blocks or some and everything. I'm proud of my output. And if you like D&D stuff and like homebrew stuff, I think it's pretty good.
That sounds great.
Is that too much? That's
an impressive body of work. We like to hear a productive guest. Are your modules on DriveThruRPG or someplace else?
No, they're on the Sixler.itch.io right now. I think the first module is on DM's Guild, but they do take a pretty solid cut. I'm probably going to put them at higher prices on those sources at some later point, but right now it's just on Itch. But you know, you get the whole download and stuff. I don't think you might need to make an account or something, but yeah, it's not super complicated. Itch is just like a game maker site. It's more for like video games and stuff, but in recent years people have been putting out traditional games and RPG based content on it, and I think, you know, the small kind of gamer community, indie community, uses it a lot, so that's kind of where it is now.
Cool. And if you have a submission going to Wizards at some point and need a hype blurb, we are more than willing to write one. Awesome. We support that endeavor.
I just want to live. I don't want to, like, I just want a job. I don't know. Like, I'll do anything. But, you know, it seems like a good direction to try and push in while I still have my moment in the sun, so to speak. You know, but awesome. It'd be good.
It's great. We are just about out of time here, Spencer. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure you got out there?
I've said it can be very hard to teach D&D. In the future, in a watch this space sort of way, you know, I want to make a series of YouTube videos that you can watch to learn how to play Dungeons and Dragons and expand on that. I know stuff like that exists, but in the past when I've said, hey, check this out, people were like, I don't want to check that out, but if you made your own, I would watch it. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do it. So yeah, the first series is going to be 7 videos that'll take you through. If you don't know anything about Dungeons and Dragons, don't even know what it is, it'll set you up and then walk you through the player's handbook and really explain everything to you the way I would do as a really great teacher, in my own opinion, you know? So I think that could be a really valuable resource that's not out yet, probably going to be coming out this year. But yeah, I got the first video done, but you kind of need all of them for it to make any sense.
That's great. That's great. That sounds like a very valuable resource. We'll be looking for that. Super cool.
Yeah, I hope it is. Yeah.
Viewers, if you're looking for Spencer's YouTube channel, where you can see that first video, that's on the in the description of the YouTube video here, as well as a link to That Happens podcast and Spencer's Patreon as well, where you can find some of his work. And we should get is the itch.io. I don't think the itch.io link is up there, but we're going to make that. We're going to fix that.
Correct. So, and that's awesome. In the chat right this second that William put in there. For our podcast listeners, we'll just say that Spencer's Patreon is at www.patreon.com/thesixler. And the That Happens podcast is at thathappenspod.com. So, and I think Spencer releases new episodes of the podcast later on Sunday. So once you get done with this, make sure that you follow Spencer on YouTube and then listen to his podcast later today on Sunday.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love it if you did that.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, so check for those links here in our, YouTube, in the description of our YouTube video, if you're coming in after this was live, and, leave us some comments, tell us, what you think of all the stuff that we've covered today. If you have any, future questions, that we can spin into new episodes, we'd love to hear your opinions. If you have, burning questions that we missed that we somehow didn't ask Spencer, hit us up with them, and maybe we'll twist Spencer's arm to come back someday.
For sure, yeah.
Maybe. Awesome. And of course, remember, if you're new to the show, that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us, the Wandering DMs. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Twitter and Facebook and GitHub if you're a coder, and TikTok, even though there's nothing there. And we do have the handle Wandering DMs on all of those sites, so look for us there, and you'll get updates on upcoming shows and guests.
If you prefer to listen to the show in audio format as you're driving to work or mowing the lawn or whatever you do while you listen to podcasts, you can get those podcasts at our website at wanderingdms.com. They're also available through all the numerous podcast carriers such as iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and all those places. If you're listening to this show on one of those third-party podcast carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us on that site. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really do. And of course, as usual, big thanks to our patrons who support the Wandering DMs show. If you would like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. You'll see our different tiers. You'll get access to our Discord server. And in particular, we do have an after-party chat that we have every Sunday. We'll be there about 10 minutes, or at least I will be. I think Paul has to go wandering today. But I'll be there to continue the conversation about Harmon Quest and Spencer's other works. And we look forward to that every single week. Let me see, upcoming shows. I'll be back Tuesday night with my Dan Plays Games from the Elder Times, late night Eastern time, as I play the old AD&D Dungeon Hat game and keep getting my ass handed to me over and over and over again. It's so much fun. Our Thursday show is off, but before any of that happens, be sure to check out Spencer's That Happens podcast later today and go subscribe to his YouTube channel if that hasn't happened already. Spencer, thank you so much for getting up early California time and joining us today on our show.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I appreciate the offer. It's a lot of fun, and thanks for checking me out if you're watching this. And if you aren't watching this or listening to this, come on, what are you guys doing? You can't hear me anyway. It doesn't matter what I say about you.
Sage words from Spencer. Don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so we hope that you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then. Bye, everyone.